Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. This episode was so much fun to record. I absolutely love talking with Mindy Green, and I really admire her and look up to her because she is such an authority on natural products. She has 4 decades of experience in the natural products and healthcare industries, and she is trained in herbalism. She's trained as an aromatherapist and as an esthetician. So she has such a solid background and is just an amazing teacher. I met Mindy when I was in Portland, Oregon at the AIHM fellowship training. And after listening to her class, I was blown away. I had sort of dabbled in aromatherapy and studied it on my own, but she just shared so much information that I never even considered in such a clear way. And it really, really got me interested to dive deeper into aromatherapy. So if you too are interested in aromatherapy, I think you're going to love this episode. And please check out the show notes for Mindy's full bio. You definitely should get her book. It is fantastic. I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to Nourish and Shine, Mindy Green. I am so grateful to have you here. Mindy is a registered aromatherapist, registered herbalist, esthetician, and an educator and public speaker. Thank you, Mindy, for being with us.
Well, Amy, thank you so much for having me. I'm really looking forward to our chat together.
Yes, absolutely. And I'd love for you to tell our audience a little bit more about yourself.
Okay, let's see. I have been working in the natural products industry since the early 1970s. I'm dating myself. But in that time, I have done a lot of different things in the natural products industry. I owned an herbs shop and a health food store and a vegan restaurant. I worked at a nonprofit medical library on botanicals. I worked for the University of Colorado Anschutz Cancer Center in integrative services for patients. I worked as the clinical esthetician for Aveda in Minneapolis for 7 years. And I, as you mentioned, I'm an esthetician and an herbalist. I always think of myself as an herbalist first, and all of my other interests in the natural products industry kind of came out of that. So including, my love of skincare and my love of essential oils. I've written some books and many articles, and I just love plants. I love what they have to teach us, and I love sharing their information with other people.
That's amazing. And I saw you haven't just written some articles. You wrote over 65 articles.
Yeah.
Yes. A variety of topics. So herbs, aromatherapy, skincare, holistic health, and integrative care. So you're definitely prolific in your writing, which is wonderful. So can you tell me, how did you get interested in herbs and aromatherapy?
You know, I always had an interest in health. I actually used to spend my allowance on vitamins when I was a kid. Yeah, it was really weird. But it was the late 60s, and I was one of those San Francisco Bay Area flower children. And so I just was interested in plants in all their forms, and especially diet and food and good nutrition and things like that. So everything kind of snowballed from there.
Wow. And how did you go about starting to learn or like make that your career?
You know, back then there weren't places you could go like there are today. Mm-hmm. And many of my contemporaries, a lot of my friends who are still in the natural products industry, especially the herb industry, many of us started herb schools. I started one in British Columbia. I also was a co-owner of the California School of Herbal Studies for about 10 years, and that's in Western Sonoma County, and that school is still going. I also worked for the Rocky Mountain Center for Botanical Studies, which is what brought me to Colorado in the mid-90s. So, you know, just there are places now you can go, but there weren't then. And many of us were self-taught, and we just started gathering together and sharing our information. And there were a few good books, and we learned about the eclectic physicians, which were late 1800s medical doctors in America that I guess you could have today called them the naturopathic physicians of their time. So those books were available, and, you know, just kind of experiential learning. I think today's students of herbalism and natural healing have such an advantage over what we had in those days to learn from. And it's really exciting to see college programs and, you know, Bastyr University and other naturopathic physicians and colleges and other schools around the country popping up and providing that kind of really good education for students these days.
Absolutely. And I know one thing we wanted to get into today was talking about aromatherapy and really the practical use of aromatherapy. And you came out when I was in Portland and taught during my AIHM fellowship class, and you have an amazing gift for teaching. And I think you had such a clear way of explaining aromatherapy and how to use it safely, and even just like the applications and dilutions and that sort of stuff. Could we get into that a little bit?
Oh, sure. Sure. Thank you for that. I do love it. And I find that those of us who teach, we teach kind of like the way we like to learn. And so, you know, just starting kind of at the beginning, what is an essential oil? It's the fragrant fraction of plants. And not all plants or herbs, as I would normally call them, not all plants have aromatic compounds. There are many useful herbs that have been used throughout history in herbal medicine that don't contain essential oils that are still useful plants, such as oat straw and burdock and dandelion and things like that, plantain, the list kind of goes on. But when we get into the aromatic plants like lemongrass and peppermint and lavender and geranium and so forth, they have what I consider kind of an extra bonus in their aromatic molecules, which also contribute to their benefits as antibacterial agents, in some cases antiviral agents. And so those are separated from the plant by distillation or other means, and they are isolated and used by the drop or several drops at a time, diluted and applied externally on the body or inhaled.
Yeah. And let's talk about that. So external and inhalation, and I'm big on this too. And can you talk to that a little bit more?
Sure. Well, those are the two main routes of application that are the safest to apply, starting with the inhalation, either through diffusion or simply opening the bottle and smelling it. Sometimes people use those little candle diffusers, or I like, my favorite kind of diffuser is an ultrasonic diffuser. It's very efficient at micronizing the drops of essential oil into little teeny tiny droplets that fill the air. And as we inhale them, they go into the lungs. And for respiratory problems, they can be very, very effective in just direct application into the lung simply through breathing. And so they can also change your mood and uplift your spirit. So they can relax. There are lots of different ways to use them depending on the chemical constituents that are found within that plant. So, you know, in our short time here, we won't be able to cover everything. So I suggest getting, for your listeners, to get a good aromatherapy book. There are many, many on the market, and to start to learn a little bit about that kind of application. And then the other that you mentioned is topical application, where you are diluting the essential oil and applying it in either a lotion or an oil base. And you are putting that on the skin, let's say on a sore muscle, or just even an overall body massage for relaxation, or simply as a beauty treatment. There are lots and lots of ways to use essential oils. And when you apply them to the skin, they actually do get absorbed into the body. and they provide a wide range of physiological activity, again, depending on the chemical constituents that are found within the essential oils that you've chosen.
So let's talk dilution a little bit. When you say dilution, first of all, do you have specific carrier oils you recommend? And when you mentioned beauty treatments as well, could you speak to that a little more too?
Okay, let's start with the carrier oils. You can pretty much use any carrier oil. My criteria personally is it cold pressed and is it organic? So the more we can put organic things on our body, the better, the less toxic load we are accumulating. And so it's really easy to get olive oil organically, but you could look also for my favorite carrier for the skin, jojoba oil. And jojoba oil is a desert plant, and J-O-J-O-B-A, in case your listeners aren't familiar with it. The J's are pronounced like H's, jojoba oil. And buying an organic, whole, non-fractionated jojoba oil is usually pretty easy in your health food store. Another oil you could choose is coconut oil, and that's often easily found as an organic oil as well. But whatever oil you choose, it could be hazelnut or sunflower or almond oil or apricot oil. The list goes on and on. So a good carrier oil is a place to start. There are very exotic carrier oils like kukui nut and macadamia nut, and even things like red and black raspberry seed oils or black seed oil. There are a lot of good carrier oils, including evening primrose and rosehip seed oil, borage oil. Anyway, you can see the list is kind of endless. But whatever you choose, sometimes you might be able to mix them together. Some of them are expensive, like the rosehip and the borage and the evening primrose. Those are all really nice for skincare. But let's just make it simple and say you've chosen your jojoba oil. The reason I like jojoba is that it has a chemical structure very similar to the sebum or the oil that our skin makes. So it's very compatible whether you're putting it on your arms and legs or on your face. And so it is a prime oil for estheticians, and most people are very compatible with that. It's not going to cause breakouts. And you would take, depending on, again, how you're using it, the dilutions can be a 0.5%, a 1%, a 2%. I don't recommend usually going over 3%. But you'll find many books that talk about higher dilutions. It just depends on what carrier oils you're using and where you're putting it. In an overall body massage, I recommend a 2% dilution. If you're covering a large part of your body, obviously you're going to spread the essential oil in a wider area. If you're just putting a dilution on a sore knee or a tennis elbow, or a shoulder with some old injuries that's achy, then you could go up to 3% dilution. So let me just talk about a 1%, and then people can do a little math. But a 1% dilution is about 5 drops of your essential oil into 1 ounce of your jojoba or other carrier oil. So a 2% would be 10 drops. And a 3% would be 15 drops. And if you're using it on the face, I recommend a 0.5% dilution, which is 2 to 3 drops of essential oil to 1 ounce of carrier oil.
Great. And as far as 1 ounce goes, that's about 30 milliliters for somebody.
It's about 30, yeah, 29.6, I think it is. But yeah, about 30 if you're going with the metric system, 30 mils.
And one of the things I really appreciated, if I remember correctly, when you were talking to our group, was you talked about how precious, like, the drops of essential oils are and how much plant material goes into them and how concentrated they are. And that overused.
They are often overused. And a common mistake that people make is thinking, well, if 5 drops are good, then 10 drops are going to be twice as good. And that's not always the case. Let's say you're using 5 drops in your bath of lavender to relax, and 10 drops, you know, you start to, in some cases, get an opposite reaction. Now, I'm not saying that necessarily 10 drops of lavender is going to stimulate you, but it's not going to be any more effective than 5 drops of lavender in your bath. And so I really caution people to think that more is better when it comes to aromatherapy. And when you consider that one drop of essential oil can represent up to 30 or 60 roses or up to an ounce of plant material, you would never use that much in any kind of dose from an herbal perspective. And so it's really good to respect the energy that is in that one drop. And it does take a lot of plant material to create one drop of essential oil. And it is kind of representative of how the plant presents the amount of essential oil as it's growing. So most plants, if they contain essential oils, and of course it varies, but if you were to distill an ounce of plant material, you would probably only get about a drop of essential oil. So you would never make a cup of tea with an ounce of plant material. You use a tablespoon. So it's kind of the same principle of just, you know, respecting the plant and how much energy it takes to grow it and distill it and all the people that are involved in doing that. And just with a little bit of sustainability and a mindset for eco, just basically the ecology of all plant life.
Yes, I think that's so important. And I'm so glad that you stated it that way. It really struck me, like I said, and it's something that I don't think we talk about enough. So yeah, absolutely. As far as safety goes, do you have some common safety tips you give?
Yes. Yes, and that's another reason you use a diluted form of it. There are a few exceptions where you can use one drop of essential oil, let's say lavender on a mosquito bite or a bee sting, or one drop of tea tree on a pimple. But really, you have to be cautious. You have to, again, dilute it down to the way it represents itself in nature. And so adding it to a carrier oil is going to mitigate any irritating compounds. And not all essential oils have irritating compounds, but many of them do. And many of us are sensitive even to the most gentle essential oils. And you can also develop a sensitivity. Let's say, oh gosh, I've been using this one essential oil for years and it never bothered me. And now all of a sudden I'm getting a little bit of a rash. It could be just your body saying that's enough for me. Or just general overexposure or an allergic reaction, even to a natural compound. So diluting the essential oils is definitely a safety issue. And again, if you follow the basic dilutions that we have outlined already, then that should be fine. But you want to, again, not overuse in the bath. The bath is actually one place that you can be more irritated than normal, because a lot of people just drop the essential oils in the water. And because essential oils and water don't mix, they often sit in a little film on the top or sit in little droplets on the surface or at the bottom of the tub. And you don't want to be sitting on those for kind of obvious reasons. But also they coat the skin as you get into the water, and without a carrier oil in them to help dilute them out, they can be more irritating to the skin. So when using essential oils in the bath, it's good to also add them to a little bit of carrier oil before you add them to the bath. Or you might just coat your body with a little bit of carrier oil, especially if you have really dry skin, before you get into the bath. And another thing I like to do is just use my massage oil on my skin before getting in the bath. And then don't put anything in the water, because the essential oils are already in the body oil that you put on your skin. And when you get in the water, then it's really going to soak in that way. But in any case, you should dilute your essential oils into a little bit of carrier oil. Some books say cream because it's high in fat. Some books say egg yolk because it's high in lecithin in the egg yolk. But it's a whole lot easier just to add it to a little bit of carrier oil. And then add that to a full tub of water. Stir it really well before you get in. And enjoy your relaxation time and let those essential oils just really soak into the skin and breathe in that beautiful aroma as you're lying there. Maybe have a little candle, a little soft music, and make it a real ritual for relaxation.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. I love your description. And speaking of like home beauty, could you go into that a little bit, like creating kind of a home beauty routine or a few things you might recommend?
Sure. Yes. I love using essential oils. And as an esthetician, of course, at home, I make sure that they're incorporated into a daily routine that I have. So I usually buy some kind of carrier oil that is simple, or we talked about the jojoba already. Argan oil is another wonderful oil for the skin, for cosmetic use, that can be purchased by itself, A-R-G-A-N, argan oil. It's from Morocco, and it's from the seed of a tree, a nut on the tree. And so it is a beautiful oil for the skin. Lots and lots of research on it. Even companies like Avon use argan oil. So it has a lot of interesting research on it for beauty care. So dropping your 5 drops of essential oil into 1 ounce. Remember, on the face, you want to use 0.5% dilution. So I'm sorry, I think I said 5 drops. 2 to 3 drops as 0.5% dilution, 0.5% dilution, in 1 ounce of your carrier oil. And again, your carrier oil can be plumped up with some other rich oils that I mentioned, such as the evening primrose or borage oil, or the red raspberry seed, or the rosehip oil. And add your 2 to 3 drops. It can be a single oil. It can be a blend of oils. For the face, one of my favorite oils is helichrysum. And helichrysum is not usually in your top 10 essential oils, but it has wonderful benefits for the skin, especially for mature and sun-damaged skin. And I also like frankincense on the face and cistus, C-I-S-T-U-S. Rose oil, of course, is wonderful. Any of the exotic oils like neroli or jasmine. But simple lavender and geranium, those are wonderful for the skin. You don't have to get exotic, and you don't have to get expensive oils for them to be beneficial. So there are lots and lots of options there for cosmetic care externally. And then you just blend those together, and I put about 2 drops with a little dropper on each cheek, and maybe 1 drop nose and forehead, and a couple drops on the neck. And then I spritz rose water into my hand as a toner, and that helps to smooth out the carrier oils with a little bit of liquid so that they go on more evenly, and you don't have to use as much oil, because you don't want a big oil slick on your face when you're done. You want it to be just moisturized enough to soak in. And the hydrosols are also extremely beneficial. The hydrosols are leftover water after distilling a plant. They remove the essential oil, and the water that's left over is basically, I kind of describe it as an herbal steam water, like a distilled water with herbal components left in it that don't go into the essential oil, but stay in the water. These are water-soluble compounds from the plant that are very, a little bit aromatic, not of course as much as the essential oil, but they have hydrating compounds, so it's very moisturizing for the skin to use hydrosols. And they also restore the pH if you happen to be using a soap that is alkaline. Alkaline soaps clean the skin really well, but you never want to leave your skin in an alkaline state. You want to restore the pH to slightly below neutral. Neutral on the pH scale is 7, and your skin wants to be 4.5 to 5.5. So using a hydrosol as a toner or part of this regime to moisturize your skin does help restore the pH, and that protects the skin. It restores the acid mantle on the skin. It prevents bacteria from growing. There are lots of reasons you want to have a slightly acidic pH on your skin. So just those two simple things, the hydrosol and the essential oil diluted in a good carrier oil, can be a very nourishing health regime and very inexpensive for you to make at home.
I love that. And I can't wait to try that because I spritz rose water usually first and then do my oil. But I like Perfect. The idea of putting on the oils and kind of mixing it because I was letting the rose.
Yeah. Can also make an emulsion in your hand instead of dropping it in little spots all over your face. Just drop about 4 drops of the carrier and essential oils together in your palm and then spritz the rose water in there and then just kind of rub your palms together and spread it out gently all over your face. That's another way that's really simple to do that.
Oh, that's great.
And when you don't combine a water with a carrier oil, if you keep them separate, then there's no need to use preservatives. And this is such a big conversation in the cosmetic world, whether you're talking about natural cosmetics or not so natural cosmetics. But I know that the natural products consumer is very, very concerned about that because in the years that I worked at that big cosmetics company, that was when everyone was concerned about parabens as preservatives. And of course, nobody really wants parabens in their cosmetics, and especially in the environment. No matter what side of the argument you're on, we do know they're not good for the environment. So keeping your water and oil separate is a way that you can use products that don't contain preservatives. So if you're making a lotion, as soon as you do an emulsion with water and oil, you have to have a preservative because the water allows for microbial, bacterial, fungal things to grow that we don't want, obviously, in our cosmetics. And substituting the most common of the substituting preservatives, phenoxyethanol, it's a good preservative, but it also requires more of it than we used to have to use for the parabens. And so it can be somewhat irritating for some people's skin. So the more we can stay away from that, the better. So keeping your hydrosol separate from your oil, you might be tempted to do an emulsion, but you want to kind of stay away from that and apply it just as needed in the moment.
That is such a great tip. And as a pharmacist, I love that because in compounding, once we add water to like anything, it basically shortens the shelf life. So
yeah,
it totally makes sense. The other thing I wanted to bring up, which I think you were one of the first person I've ever heard at least talk to me about cold showers and how that can be beneficial for like a beauty routine. Could you speak to that?
Yes, yes. Well, do be careful on the face. If you are prone to Kuprous skin, that's the tiny broken blood vessels that sometimes appear as we get older, if our skin is thin or very, very sensitive. So we want to avoid extremes of hot and cold on the face. But if you're in the shower, I call it the lost art of hydrotherapy. So ending your shower with a little cold rinse, or if you're really robust, you can stand in the shower and do a couple rounds of hot and cold, hot and cold. And what that does is just it expands and contracts your blood vessels, and so it gets your circulation going. And it's a way also, believe it or not, to warm up. To end your shower with a little cold rinse at the end, even in the winter, you will be surprised at how warm you feel when you get out of the shower, because we've all experienced, you turn off the hot water and all of a sudden, oh my gosh, it's so cold now. So if you're not hardy enough to try the hot and cold, you can start with a little warm, a little cool, a little warm, a little cool, and even that will be enough to increase your circulation. And as you build up your stamina for that, then you can move into getting a little more heroic with that treatment.
That is great. Can we talk then, you mentioned aromatherapy and kind of moving through the seasons. And I think talking about fall, since that's kind of coming up and where we're at now, and into winter wellness when it comes to aromatherapy and also just skincare. Could you speak to that?
Sure, yes. Well, yeah, our bodies do change with the seasons. And if you are following a diet, I know in Ayurveda, they talk a lot about changing with the seasons. And, you know, we're so used to going to the grocery store and buying bananas all year round and pineapple and tropical fruits that aren't exactly in season if we live in the northern climates where it's cold. And so in all of the decades where we were a society where we grew our own food and we had our own storage shelters and we relied on carrots and beets and root crops over the winter, those really are the things that help keep us healthy. And so if we're following that throughout a holistic lifestyle, then you might want to consider moving into a different kind of, whether it's an herbal tea that you drink, you might want to move into more roots and things like that, that tend to be more robust and more cleansing. The same is true for essential oils. You might want to, instead of using lavender, maybe do something that's going to be even extra special, immune tonic, such as one of the melaleucas. Now, of course, we know tea tree, the Melaleuca alternifolia. There's also Melaleuca quinquenervia. The common name is Niuli, N-I-A-O-U-L-I. Some people think you're misspelling neroli. No, it's Niuli. And I love that essential oil. It smells, to me, so much better than tea tree. I'm not a huge fan of the aroma of tea tree, although its activity is amazing. So if you don't mind that, then you can use tea tree in your bath. You can use tea tree if you practice skin brushing, which is a dry brush where you just brush your skin. It eliminates the dead skin cells. It allows all your body lotions and your oils and your essential oils to absorb much better on your skin when you don't have dead skin cells clogging your pores. So you could use a couple drops of tea tree on your skin brush as you're brushing. And if you even want to follow your acupuncture meridians, you know, if you're a student of acupuncture or you like Chinese medicine, you might want to check that out. But there are lots of ways that you can improve or at least keep yourself healthy over the winter through your herbal teas, your choice of foods, the essential oils that you choose. And, you know, as a pretty much holistic practitioner and with lots of modalities in my background, I don't think we can really rely on any one thing. So I like to combine essential oils sometimes with an herbal bath, make a big pot of herbal tea and pour that water into your tub as you add your essential oils and your carrier oil to that. If you're doing a facial steam with some herbal tea, and then add essential oils afterwards, or you can even add essential oils to your steam as you're steaming your face. You're also getting those essential oil molecules inhaled into your lungs to keep your lungs healthy. You could run a diffuser in your bedroom at night during the cold and flu season. I like frankincense for that, but there are many, many essential oils that are good for the respiratory system, including, you know, eucalyptus and even tea tree, even some of the simple ones like rosemary, which we don't really think of for the respiratory system. But really, the doctrine of signatures for the respiratory system is any of the tree essential oils. So sandalwood, frankincense, the melaleucas, any of the eucalyptuses, there are many varieties of those. And again, I recommend starting with a low dilution, just a couple of drops in your diffuser. If you have the kind with a water well, they usually hold about 8 ounces of water, and you can do somewhere between 2 and 5 drops of essential oil. And I like an intermittent setting on those diffusers if your machine has that available. And if it doesn't, if it's just running all night, just keep a low dilution in there. And especially with, if you're using it with children.
Can you speak more to that? That's something I recently purchased a new diffuser, and it does have an intermittent setting, which I found enjoyable because I seem to notice the oil more than
yes,
if it's
yes.
going continuously. But can you just explain a little more for people who may not be familiar with that?
Yeah. Well, starting just with olfactory exhaustion, your nose gets used to an aroma and you don't smell it after a while. And even though you're still getting the aromatic compounds that you're breathing in and that are in the air, killing airborne bacteria on contact is one of the pluses of essential oils. It's nice to just be able to enjoy the aroma. So an intermittent setting is best. That's when the diffuser goes off for a few minutes. And the settings can vary. So anything from like 5 minutes on to 10 minutes off, or 20 minutes on to 45 minutes off, whatever your setting is, just to give your body a little bit of a break. And there's some controversy over, well, is that really necessary? And there are differing opinions. But personally, I do like an intermittent setting just because, as you mentioned, I notice it more. And it does give your body a little bit of a break to kind of process what it's been exposed to and then be ready for the next round of compounds coming in. So just to give your physiology a little bit of a break in between the aromatic compounds that you're breathing in.
Absolutely. So when we're speaking to essential oils, is there like, do you have specific recommendations for what people should look for when they're choosing a product or a manufacturer?
Yeah, boy, that's a really long subject, but I'm assuming that most people are going to their local health food store, and sometimes the clerks are knowledgeable about the essential oils, sometimes maybe not so much, but it's worth asking about that, and asking about how they choose their oils. How do they vet products that they're bringing in? If you're going to a large chain, then generally they've done a lot of vetting of their product line. A lot of times the reps will come in and give trainings to the employees, so that can be helpful. And when in doubt, I always say call the company. Go to their, if you're buying online, look at their 800 number and give them a call and ask them, you know, how do you choose your oils? Are they organic? When were they distilled? You know, things like that. But what to look for on a label? You want to look for a Latin name, because if it has a Latin name, then it tells you that it at some point came from a plant. Now, it doesn't guarantee it hasn't been adulterated since it was distilled from that plant, but let's just assume that it's distilled directly from that plant and that's all that's in there. So you want to look for a Latin name. Ideally, it will have the plant part. It doesn't always. But if you buy cinnamon bark oil or cinnamon leaf oil, they can be different. If you buy clove bud oil or clove leaf oil, it's different. So you want to look for that. If you're buying something like citrus oil, ideally, it would tell you if it's distilled or if it's cold pressed, because a cold pressed oil is not photosensitizing when you apply the essential oil to the skin, even in a diluted form, and then your skin is exposed to ultraviolet light, whether that's the sun, if you're out hiking, or you're at the pool, or you're God forbid, on a tanning bed. I'm not a fan. that can cause problems because those essential oil compounds can speed up the production of melanin and cause burning and uneven pigmentation. So if you have a distilled citrus oil, you don't have to worry about that. If it's a cold pressed essential oil, most citrus essential oils contain these photosensitizing compounds that can be problematic upon sun exposure. Having said that, the citrus oils are excellent for the skin. They're really good for oily and acne skin on the face. Of course, everything is diluted. I just want to reiterate that. Don't ever put lemon or orange or anything else directly on your face. You want to dilute those out. And they can be irritating. They contain terpenes. They can irritate the skin. You especially have to be careful in the bathtub with the citrus oils. The safest oil, let's say you make your own lip balm, and you don't know if your orange oil is distilled or cold pressed, or your lemon is distilled or cold pressed. The orange oil, orange, mandarin, and tangerine, whether it's cold pressed or distilled, don't contain enough photosensitizing compounds to be problematic. So orange oil is the safest oil to use if you don't know if your citrus oils are distilled or cold pressed. But that would be one of the things I would look for on a label. And if it's not on there, I would call the manufacturer and say, which is it? And if they don't know, they probably should know their product a little bit better than that. So I would find a different supplier.
That is such a good tip. And just to make sure I'm clear, so distilled would not be photosensitizing?
Correct.
Okay. And the cold pressed would?
Yes.
Okay. I recently...
Now, the photosensitizing compounds can vary in different essential oils. The citruses are the most offending, but there are some other essential oils that are not citruses that contain these compounds. They're rare. Things like angelica and cumin, not things that most people use, but it's good to research that before you make a blend that you're going to put on your skin for being outdoors all day.
Yes. One of my girlfriends recently received a terrible burn from bergamot.
Yes, it's the worst.
Yes, it was awful. And we just, I was blown away at how serious it could be. So...
Yeah, and that's one thing to look for on a label, Amy, is that most companies sell bergamot that has the pregabtine, that's the offending agent, that is removed. Most companies do not sell bergamot oil without removing that. But if you're buying from a true aromatherapy company, a lot of aromatherapists want to keep that in there because it has some value therapeutically, but you need to know that you can't expose your skin after you apply it for somewhere between, depends on how much you're putting on and your skin sensitivity and your altitude. I live at altitude, you know, you can't do that here at almost 6,000 feet. So that, you know, a lot can depend on that, but you definitely want to make sure that your bergamot oil is bergaptin-free. It might say FCF, which stands for furanocoumarin-free, but that is one time that you want to check for sure if your label shouldn't, it doesn't say. All labels on bergamot should say. It's really more like the lime, lemon, grapefruits that are out there that should tell you also. Those are the ones that can be very irritating to the skin and cause uneven pigmentation.
And with tea tree, I've heard that if it's been open for a while, it can be sensitizing. Is that right? Versus fresh tea?
Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up, because as essential oils get old, and tea tree, some of the research, they're finding that it is particularly offending, is that as those compounds cascade into other constituents, just in the aging process within the bottle, that some of the compounds can be more irritating. And so tea tree is often used on the face for acne. And so that can be problematic. So I recommend buying small bottles, 5 mL bottles, and don't, you know, be stingy with it and say, oh my gosh, I just want to save it. Because after 2-3, depends on the essential oil, but 2-4 years, some of them get better with age. I've had some 10 years that are still just fine, but you really have to kind of know the chemistry of the oil. But generally speaking, if your tea tree is over 3 years old and it's been stored in heat and light, it's going to be very different than if you've stored it in the fridge. If there's a lot of air in the bottle, if it's almost empty and there's all that oxygen in the bottle, that will help increase the peroxidation or oxygenation or aging of the constituents in the bottle.
Wow, really good tips. And that I think will help a lot of people.
Good, yeah.
I guess in order to kind of wrap up, I'd love to point people to your website. You have a lot of great resources on there, as well as your book. And this is one of my favorite aromatherapy books, hands down. And I've actually made some of the recipes with the lotions and creams you have in the book as well. And it's called Aromatherapy, A Complete Guide to the Healing Art. And can you let us know your website address as well?
Yes, it is Green Scent Sations, ScentSations. It's a little play on words from my name. greensensations.com. And just to let your listeners know, I don't sell essential oils and I don't sell anything on my website. I have my books listed on there. The only one that is in print is the one that you just mentioned, Amy, Aromatherapy, A Complete Guide to the Healing Art. And it will direct, if you click on it, I think it directs you to Amazon, or you just go to Amazon and buy it on Amazon. And but I do have a lot of interviews from webcasts like yours and radio interviews. I can't always keep up when the links are broken, so I apologize in advance if you click on a link that's not working. There are some articles, I think, on there, and I also provide a resource list for my recommendations for essential oil companies that I think are good, and some good books and some resources like the two nonprofit aromatherapy organizations in America, and some great resources for my favorite nonprofit herbal group called the American Botanical Council that publishes Herbal Gram magazine. I love them. And some resources for getting further education and so on. That is free on my website. And many of those things are also listed at the back of my book. So if you're just getting my book, that might be enough for you. And the book does have a very big section, big chapter on skincare. So those who were interested in that particular subject might find that helpful.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being with me today. It's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. You are so full of information and just a wealth of knowledge. So
thank you, Amy. It was my pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to Nourish and Shine. I hope that you enjoy this episode and that you'll leave me a review on iTunes so that more people can hear the podcast. I'd also love to connect with you on social media. You can find me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I would love to hear your questions, so please send them my way. Also, you can check out my website. It's amysopola.com. I hope that today's interview provided you with some inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and to live a whole, vibrant life. Please join me again next week for another amazing interview. Have a wonderful week. The information provided on this podcast is for educational purposes only. It's not intended to diagnose or treat any disease or condition. Please do not apply any of this information without first speaking with your medical provider.